Good Monday and welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in the show today, Taylor Charlstrom will have a report on the economic viability of improving soil health in almond orchards. And I'll have a look at national and regional agricultural news, kicking things off with regional ag news headlines right after this word from our sponsor.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture recently discussed industrial hemp with the Republic of Armenia Deputy Secretary. Members of CDFA's Plant Health and Pest Prevention Services Division met with representatives from the Market Surveillance Inspection Body of the Government of Armenia on industrial hemp. The Republic of Armenia has recently legalized the cultivation of industrial hemp and wanted to learn more from CDFA on California's regulatory program. The unseasonably hot temperatures currently being recorded in California's Salinas Valley and other West Coast growing regions are raising concerns at Marcon Cooperative over quality and shelf life for many key fruit and vegetable crops. Temperatures have reached into the 90s even near the coast and above 100 degrees for much of the inland area, but in general, temperatures have been above normal since early in the month and are expected to remain high through early July. For baby leaf and other lettuce items, some of the concerns include bolting and cedar, dehydration, internal burn, inconsistent growth, increased insect pressure, growth crack, rib blight, shortened shelf life, and sunburn and sun scalding. And concerns for strawberries include decreased sizing, increased bruising, soft texture, and shortened shelf life. Excessive heat in California's Imperial Valley and San Joaquin Valley will impact multiple commodities. High temperatures will affect harvesting hours and may cause softness, reduced sugar, and sunburn in bell peppers, blueberries, cantaloupe, eggplant, honeydew, oranges, squash, tomatoes, and watermelon. Marcon suppliers will harvest in the early hours of the morning to avoid peak temperatures for their production crews and commodity and value-added products. In some instances, production may be curtailed for the well-being of harvesting crews, which could lead to supply issues. Maintaining a cold chain throughout distribution is critical for maximizing quality shelf life. It's a bountiful summer of blueberries for California Giant Berry Farms as the company forecasts giant volumes of blues ahead. The growers' high yields and exceptional quality continue as consumer demand for blueberries remains firmly in place. The pandemic greatly increased consumers' desire for blueberries, and it has not dissipated in 2022, according to Marcus Duran, director of Bushberry Supply for California Giant Berry Farms. He says blueberries are increasingly becoming a consistent staple for consumers who enjoy their immune-boosting nutrition, sweet taste, and versatility as a fresh snack or ingredient item to a recipe. They anticipate this demand and are excited to report their summer production is back on track to deliver top-quality fruit. Broccoli and cauliflower supplies are steady right now. They're about the same as they were this time last year with great supplies, according to Crystal Chavez of Gold Coast Packing of Santa Maria, California. Currently, both broccoli and cauliflower are coming out of Gold Coast local growing region, the Santa Maria Valley. Along with this region, the Salinas Valley is also shipping the vegetables right now. Meanwhile, Chavez says demand looks strong given that generally the consumption of fresh produce has been growing as consumers look to eat healthier. Clean eating and plant-based lifestyles have become more popular since the pandemic. Broccoli and cauliflower are two favorites among consumers as many continue to cook more at home and learn to incorporate fresh veggies into their meals, and consumption will only continue to grow, according to Chavez. To meet that demand, Gold Coast offers broccoli and cauliflower in both retail and food service packs. It also recently introduced its newest retail items, broccoli and cauliflower alone, but also a blend of the two, and its garden blend, which is broccoli, cauliflower, and baby carrots. These are offered in both 12-ounce and 2-pound pack sizes. Looking ahead, quality and supply are expected to be great over the next few weeks, according to Chavez. She says the Santa Maria area has been experiencing warmer temperatures, but the quality has not been affected. Produce industry professionals have just two chances to jump into a seven-week mental fitness boot camp before the end of the year. Leadership coach Wendy McManus is launching one group starting in mid-July and another in September. It is a small group program with just a few spots available for either start time. Mental fitness is the ability to handle life's challenges with a positive mindset. It sounds simple, but is not always easy to do, according to McManus. And research shows that it makes a difference in everything from performance to relationships to the overall sense of well-being. In fact, mental fitness is the best predictor of how happy you'll be and how well you will perform relative to your potential. Mental Fitness Bootcamp is based on the neuroscience of change. Participants learn how to recognize and quiet the inner voices that hold them back to amplify the voices that propel them towards their goals. This practice activates the part of their brains that help them to thrive so they can move towards their aspirations with renaissance rather than resistance. Bootcampers learn strategies for how to manage their brain and build habits to help them use these skills in all areas of their lives. The program works by incorporating daily app-guided exercises with weekly training videos and group coaching calls. Learning in a supportive community helps participants stay on track to get the most out of their journey. After 7 weeks, participants will experience positive changes in how they think, feel, and interact with others. More details about the program, which is also available to people outside of the produce industry, are available by contacting Wendy McManus at 321-695-3706 or on the website at www.connect2potential.com. That's connect2potential.com with a number 2.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Soil health has been touted heavily in the almond industry over the last few years, and the research, both from cooperative extension and private entities, show the benefits of what having a healthy soil can do for an almond tree and its yield. At the end of the day, growers will have the same question as they do with every management decision, though: how economically feasible is it to practice good soil health? Dr. Carl Wyant discusses a private study done in almond by Helier Ag that proves the good economics that can be had utilizing soil health management practices.
We knew from some of the extension research and from the other researchers out there that almond trees respond to having an improved relationship with their microbiome, and that's the fungi and bacteria. We also knew that, from previous work, that a lot of our bacteria and fungi are largely dormant in the soil because they're so hungry. They're so hungry, they just go to sleep. It's a survival mechanism, and they're not going to work for you because they're asleep on the job. So what we did was we took our Phycoterra product, which is a microbial food that you can mix in with your fertilizer in almond production, and put it out through the irrigation system. We took that Phycoterra and we fed the bacteria and fungi a regular meal, and we put them back to work. And this was starting way back in the fall of 2019. And we've kept track of our research in Sutter and Atwater, California since then. And so we have a 2-year study now that shows that soil health pays. Getting started now on improving your soil, will pay down the road as you make your soil better, as you wake up your microbes and you put them back to work for your crop.
Applications of microalgae were applied consistently over a period of time at a rate of 3 quarts per acre in order to keep the biology alive and continuously feeding. The results were insightful, according to Wyant.
We saw results as soon as the end at the harvest of 2020, where at the Sutter location, we improved the yield over grower standard by almost 520 pounds per acre. And when you crunch all those numbers, that's about a $2,300 gross value coming back to the grower, even at the 2020 non-pareil almond price, and about a 20-to-1 return on investment. If you go down to our Atwater location in 2020, much, much sandier soils, same program, but we improved those yields over grower standard by about 300 pounds an acre and over $500 gross improvement an acre just from a raw dollar standpoint. If you think about it as return on investment, that's about 4-to-1 ROI. If you want to go to the next year, so we kept all of our plots the same, so it's a repeat year. we're continuing to improve soil health. We're continuing to keep those microbes awake. And we have those metrics that show improvements in soil structure, water holding capacity, and nutrient cycling. But in 21, of course, I don't have to remind folks too much about the drought that we hit. Both of our locations were under extreme or exceptional drought. So that way far into that drought spectrum, the real nasty stuff where the whole map's red, that's where our plots were. And we found that even under that drought stress, we were able to improve yield over grower standards. So at the same Sutter location on nonpareil, we improved yield by 860 pounds an acre over grower standard. And with you adjust that nut price for that year, it's about $2,300 gross coming back an acre, or another 20-to-1 ROI. You go down to Atwater, again, that very sandy soil. It's like being at the beach. We improved nut yields by about 170 pounds an acre, just over 500 pounds an acre gross, or $500 an acre gross coming back to that grower, and a 4-to-1 ROI. So two very different years in terms of drought. One year wasn't so bad in 2020. 2021 was pretty nasty, but you can see getting involved in soil health and really targeting the foundation with your microbes by feeding them, that's a great way to open up some new yield opportunity despite some of these challenging environmental conditions that we have had.
The biology enhancing product used in the study is technically classified as a biostimulant, a controversial subject in the ag industry, but the results of the study provide evidence that biostimulants can have a place in agriculture.
We went to these sites and we knew that they had dormant microbes. They had sleepy bacteria and sleepy fungi because they were hungry. And then we chose the Phycoterra to help wake them up, provide them that food source, wake up the microbes, and start that cascade of soil health that really has a functional and functioning microbiome at its core. So that, I think that's the evidence really is matching up those active ingredients, the stuff that's on the product label, with what it actually does. So we matched Phycoterra to food source, and we were able to use that mode of action, that clear mode of action, to feed the microbes and get the results that we wanted.
If given the chance to redo the study in the future, Wyant said that he would use more soil moisture sensors.
The change in the soil's ability to store moisture over time. So now we're 2 years into this, and what we're seeing, even coming into this super dry winter we had and dry spring, you know, across that 3-foot profile, we have about 10% more soil moisture in the Phycoterra treated plot than we do the grower standard. And if I had my druthers, I would love to see this replicated in the Sutter location, just showing how this long-term vision of changing the soil health and changing by impacting the microbes and feeding the microbes Phycoterra, that we can actually start to change water holding capacity for the better.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In national agricultural news, the U.S. has tariffs in place on over $300 billion worth of Chinese imports. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai says those duties give the U.S. significant leverage on China, making them useful when negotiating with the Asian nation. Bloomberg News says the debate is ongoing among members of the Biden administration on whether to keep those tariffs in place for the time being. In a testimony to the Senate, Tai says the China tariffs, in her view, are a significant piece of leverage, and a trade negotiator never walks away from leverage. Biden recently said that he's in the process of deciding on whether to remove any of the duties first put in place by the Trump administration in 2018. Tai also points out that removing the tariffs would have a limited impact on the rapid rise of inflation. Earlier this month, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said that a reduction in duties may help bring prices down. And speaking of U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai, she says commerce officials, not her, are responsible for imports of tariffs helping to inflate the price of fertilizer, a key farm input. It was an awkward moment for her as Kansas Senator Jerry Moran brought up a big problem for farmers, and that is the huge spike in fertilizer prices.
What can you do? I'm talking about phosphates from Morocco. This administration placed countervailing duties on fertilizer ingredients coming from Trinidad and Tobago. What can you do to help lower the cost of imported fertilizer components?
But Ambassador Tai avoided a direct answer, arguing instead she's working with USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack on boosting domestic fertilizer production and not rolling back import duties.
The anti-dumping countervailing duty programs are run out of commerce, and your specific question is, what can we do at USTR? And that was the filter through which I was responding.
And so is the answer that you have nothing to do with eliminating those countervailing tariffs and duties at the Department of Commerce?
They're not my programs, but I am happy with Secretary Vilsack to have those conversations with the Commerce Secretary.
Please do.
Separately, the House Appropriations Committee sent to the full House its $27 billion fiscal year 2023 USDA Food and Drug Administration spending bill, up more than 8% from this year. Subcommittee Chair Bishop Sanford.
The bill invests more than $545 million for rural broadband expansion, including $450 million for the ReConnect program. The bill also provides over $3.1 billion for farm and conservation programs. The investments in this bill support sustainable agricultural improvements to mitigate the consequences of climate change while maintaining high levels of production.
The bill has more than $4.2 billion for rural water, sewer, and housing, record levels for ag research, and full funding of the SNAP, child nutrition, and WIC programs. The panel passed an amendment banning China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran from owning U.S. farmland, but killed one to withhold funds from the FDA until it issues a report on its handling of the infant formula crisis. A series of roundtables regarding the waters of the U.S. rule concluded last week. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more on the next steps for the rulemaking process.
The Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers conclude a series of roundtables this week, gathering stakeholder thoughts on changing the waters of the U.S. rule. Courtney Briggs, American Farm Bureau Federation, Senior Director of Government Affairs, says the goal of these events was to find regional differences.
The roundtables are wrapping up this week. There are 10 in total, and the point of these roundtables is to talk about the regional differences as it pertains to WOTUS, because WOTUS plays out very differently based on what region of the country you're in.
Briggs says, however, the discussions won't be considered in the rulemaking process.
There's been some roundtables that have been very well balanced and have brought different perspectives to the table to talk about regional differences, but there certainly have been some that have been very one-sided. And those have been concerning because they have failed to bring to the table mainstream agricultural representatives. But one of the biggest concerns is the agencies have stated that they are not going to use these roundtables as part of the regulatory process, and it really begs the question, what is the point of these roundtables?
Briggs says the rulemaking process continues, but the Supreme Court will weigh in soon.
We expect that the agencies will release a finalized rule at some point this calendar year, but all attention is now turning to the Supreme Court. They have announced that they will hear oral arguments in Sackett versus the EPA on October 3rd. So that will be the first case that they will hear next session, and that case has the potential to provide a lot of clarity and certainty for the regulated community.
Michael Clements, Washington.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack last week discussed increasing efforts to improve forest resiliency through a variety of programs and approaches. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain has the story.
At the U.S. Department of Agriculture, we believe that with innovative policies and incentives, climate-smart reforestation and forest management can be a meaningful tool to increasing forest health.
So Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says to that end, the U.S. Forest Service will be involved in greater actions and reforestation targets by the year 2030, as well as accelerate seed and nursery capacity.
What I've seen and what leaders like U.S. Forest Service Chief Randy Moore tell me is that our investments in reforestation rebuild our forests to ensure continued carbon, water, and wood product benefits.
The secretary making his remarks Thursday at the 1T.org U.S. Chapter Summit. Among the actions announced include development of support decision tools for aspects from carbon stewardship and water conservation, prescribed fire action plans, innovative markets for sustainable forest products, and inventory of old growth and mature forest. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
U.S. honey production has dropped by 1.4% per year during the past three decades, while honey imports have grown by 7.6% every year, so imports have been filling the domestic supply deficit. Imports have exceeded domestic honey production since 2005 and accounted for 74% of U.S. honey supplies in 2021. The top three foreign suppliers are India, Vietnam, and Argentina, and together they supply more than 71% of the total imports. Honey imports grew as domestic consumption of honey and honey sweetened products increased. The expansion reached an all-time high last year when domestic production was at its lowest volume since 1991. During 2021, production in all three of the major honey-producing states, including North Dakota, South Dakota, and California, were 25% below 1991 levels, while production in the rest of the U.S. declined by almost half during the same period. Shrinking market production was mainly due to decreased honey production per colony. In national agricultural news, the U.S. has tariffs in place on over $300 billion worth of Chinese imports. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai says those duties give the U.S. significant leverage on China, making them useful when negotiating with the Asian nation. Bloomberg News says the debate is ongoing among members of the Biden administration on whether to keep those tariffs in place for the time being. In a testimony to the Senate, Tai says the China tariffs, in her view, are a significant piece of leverage and a trade negotiation never walks away from leverage. Biden recently said that he's in the process of deciding on whether to remove any of the duties first put in place by the Trump administration in 2018. Tai also points out that removing the tariffs would have a limited impact on the rapid rise of inflation. Earlier this month, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said that a reduction in duties may help bring prices down. And speaking of U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai, she says commerce officials, not her, are responsible for imports of tariffs helping to inflate the price of fertilizer, a key farm input. It was an awkward moment for her as Kansas Senator Jerry Moran brought up a big problem for farmers, and that is the huge spike in fertilizer prices.
What can you do? I'm talking about phosphates from Morocco. This administration placed countervailing duties on fertilizer ingredients coming from Trinidad and Tobago. What can you do to help lower the cost of imported fertilizer components?
But Ambassador Tai avoided a direct answer, arguing instead she's working with USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack on boosting domestic fertilizer production and not rolling back import duties.
The anti-dumping countervailing duty programs are run out of commerce, and your specific question is, what can we do at USTR? And that was the filter through which I was responding.
And so is the answer that you have nothing to do with eliminating those countervailing tariffs and duties at the Department of Commerce?
They're not my programs, but I am happy with Secretary Vilsack to have those conversations with the Commerce Secretary.
Please do.
Separately, the House Appropriations Committee sent to the full House its $27 billion fiscal year 2023 USDA Food and Drug Administration spending bill, up more than 8% from this year. Subcommittee Chair Bishop Sanford.
The bill invests more than $545 million for rural broadband expansion, including $450 million for the ReConnect program. The bill also provides over $3.1 billion for farm and conservation programs. The investments in this bill support sustainable agricultural improvements to mitigate the consequences of climate change while maintaining high levels of production.
The bill has more than $4.2 billion for rural water, sewer, and housing, record levels for ag research, and full funding of the SNAP, child nutrition, and WIC programs. The panel passed an amendment banning China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran from owning U.S. farmland, but killed one to withhold funds from the FDA until it issues a report on its handling of the infant formula crisis. A series of roundtables regarding the waters of the U.S. rule concluded last week. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more on the next steps for the rulemaking process.
The Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers conclude a series of roundtables this week gathering stakeholder thoughts on changing the waters of the U.S. rule. Courtney Briggs, American Farm Bureau Federation Senior Director of Government Affairs, says the goal of these events was to find regional differences.
The roundtables are wrapping up this week. There are 10 in total, and the point of these roundtables is to talk about the regional differences as it pertains to WOTUS, because WOTUS plays out very differently based on what region of the country you're in.
Briggs says, however, the discussions won't be considered in the rulemaking process.
There's been some roundtables that have been very well balanced and have brought different perspectives to the table to talk about regional differences, but there certainly have been some that have been very one-sided. And those have been concerning because they have failed to bring to the table mainstream agricultural representatives. But one of the biggest concerns is the agencies have stated that they are not going to use these roundtables as part of the regulatory process, and it really begs the question, what is the point of these roundtables?
Briggs says the rulemaking process continues, but the Supreme Court will weigh in soon.
We expect that the agencies will release a finalized rule at some point this calendar year, but all attention is now turning to the Supreme Court. They have announced that they will hear oral arguments in Sackett versus the EPA on October 3rd. So that will be the first case that they will hear next session, and that case has the potential to provide a lot of clarity and certainty for the regulated community.
Michael Clements, Washington.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack last week discussed increasing efforts to improve forest resiliency through a variety of programs and approaches. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain has the story.
At the U.S. Department of Agriculture, we believe that with innovative policies and incentives, climate-smart reforestation and forest management can be a meaningful tool to increasing forest health.
So Agriculture Secretary Todd Vilsack says to that end, the U.S. Forest Service will be involved in greater actions and reforestation targets by the year 2030, as well as accelerate seed and nursery capacity.
What I've seen and what leaders like U.S. Forest Service Chief Randy Moore tell me is that our investments in reforestation rebuild our forests to ensure continued carbon, water, and wood product benefits.
The secretary making his remarks Thursday at the 1T.org U.S. Chapter Summit. Among the actions announced include development of support decision tools for aspects from carbon stewardship and water conservation, prescribed fire action plans, innovative markets for sustainable forest products, and inventory of old growth and mature forest. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
After 2 years of effort by agriculture exporters, retailers, and others, Congress has approved Section 3580, the Ocean Shipping Reform Act of 2022, sending it to the president for his signature. Almond Alliance President and CEO Aubrey Betancourt attended the signing of the Ocean Shipping Reform Act on June 16th.
This is the first major reform to federal maritime law and Federal Maritime Commission authority in almost 25 years. And in some cases, we're still operating under laws and policies from the 1800s. It's an incredible legacy in this part of kind of the legal aspect of shipping and what that affects throughout the United States. So as a lot of us know, we kind of have to take that step back. A lot of us know and understand that we have no U.S. carriers anymore. There are no U.S. steamship lines. And so we are completely dependent on foreign operating carrier and shipping lines. And what we've noticed in recent history, especially, it's been exacerbated as a result of the supply chain crisis, and spiked even harder during as a result of the different repercussions of COVID and behavior throughout the global supply chain. Is these foreign carriers were acting a bit flippantly at times, refusing to take product even though it was contracted and booked to be taken overseas, refusing to pick it up, shortening their receiving windows, filing detention and demurrage fines on shippers or shippers representatives, such as handlers or freight forwarders or truckers who are representing, and basically by physically being there representing the shipper itself themselves. And so what this finally does is it gives some teeth to the Federal Maritime Commission for the first time, taking it from a conflict resolution body, an inspection and research body, and arming it with some regulatory authority for the first time. And so what it allows the FMC to do is over the course of the next 3 years to establish additional requirements it requires them to establish additional requirements and prohibited conduct for ocean carriers, requires the FMC to issue rules related to certain fee assessments and prohibited practices, and establish a shipping registry. So it's bringing that data transparency that we desperately need so that we're communicating better real-time information between our trucks, our freight, our trains, and our ships, so that we actually know when and where people are and what they're doing and how long they're going to be there with forward enough advance notice, and start to rein in, putting some criteria in place on some of the fines and fees that the carriers have been levying. And so bringing some transparency, bringing some rule and order to the road, and arming an authoritative U.S. body to enforce that.
Shipping and port issues have burdened the tree net industry for the last few years, and it's no understatement to say that the almond industry has been adversely affected. Betancourt explained next steps to be taken for almond growers and processors to see the effects of the Reform Act.
This is where the work really begins. You're taking an entity that didn't have this authority before, and now they're armed with this new authority. So this is really where the work of the advocate, the Almond Alliance and our sister trade associations really needs to step in and make sure that the letter of the law is being enforced and enacted in a timely fashion. And so there's certain stipulations, if you read into it, about 45 days to start establishing certain criteria. So immediately it's kicking the FMC into high gear. And so we're going to continue to work with them in order to hopefully accelerate some of those timelines, help them get in under the wire instead of taking the full 3 years to do certain things. And I think at the very least, just the action of doing this for the first time, where you have, almost unanimous passage in the House, unanimous passage in the Senate, and immediate signage by the president. This is a truly bipartisan bill. It was introduced in August of last year and signed in June of this year. That is in record time in modern politics. It's forcing the rest of the world to stand up a little bit straighter. And so the carriers are already starting to do that. We've already had great interactions with some of the carriers as a result of that. And even before, knowing this was coming. So, it's what this means, and will it translate down to our folks? Yes, this means that there's going to hopefully be some fair practices and rules of the road that are transparent, and everybody will know how to play by them for all of our different partners within the supply chain. Ultimately, that trickles down to our handlers and our processors, right? Because they'd get slapped with a shipper fee. Well, now you can't do that without delineating exactly why. And what happened. And there's a laundry list of criteria that now the carriers have to list when they find somebody. And if they don't provide that information, we're not liable to pay the fine. So it is finally kind of stepping up on behalf of the American shipping industry, or American shippers, which is our businesses and our farms throughout. You know, ag really carried this legislation. We were sitting in the room. It was an amazing experience. We're sitting in the room with representatives from retail, because this also has some aspects that help our importing community as well for American importers. And literally they looked at all of us in the ag world and said, you know, you guys really did all the heavy lifting. And so it was a big moment for the ag sector, I think, for the United States, for us to demonstrate that we do still know how to flex our muscle really well and unite across the spectrum. It was everybody from soybeans and apples out of the north, out of the Pacific Northwest, to almonds out of the West. It was all of us together. So it was really a big moment, I think, for ag. It is a big moment just from a legislative standpoint. If you're a political geek, something bipartisan getting done right now is crazy good. Take a moment to sit there for a second, know what that feels like. And then I think finally, it's a really a big moment for our American farmers and ranchers and across all of the ag sector, because it's something that we can grab onto that we know we can enforce. To make sure that our government is looking out for our American industry and place in the world.
The signing on June 16th saw excellent representation not only for California agriculture, but agriculture in the country, including almonds. Almond Alliance felt it absolutely necessary for there to be representation for the almond industry.
It's a unique and small entity, 7,600 farms, 110 haulers, shellers, and processors, but we represent 80% of the world's supply. We represent 30% of the domestic, 80% of the world's supply is coming straight out of the United States. We are the fourth largest export, ag export for the United States. We are the second largest export out of California, which is the largest agricultural economy in the United States. So this is a moment of really showing and demonstrating where we have arrived as a community. I think over time, not only in terms of our economic prowess, but also our political savvy and position. This is a great moment for the almond world, for sure. I'm going to pat ourselves on the back a little bit. It's a big moment for us. This is exactly where we need to be as an industry and as a community. We're progressive, we're leading in solution, and we're going to continue to be in that space to do that. We don't let the world happen to us. And that is something I've always admired about this community. And I think this was a great honor and recognition of where we've arrived as a community. It's not just about being a specialty crop anymore. It's about being an agricultural powerhouse.
The Ocean Shipping Reform Act signing is a big win for American workers, farms, and supply, especially for the almond industry. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.